Well, hello and welcome to what is the 126th episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Al Coates, and
Scott Castle Renner.
Well, get you with your fancy pants foreign
fancy
accent.
Pants name.
How the heck are you, Scott? I'm fine.
How are you, Al?
I'm fine. I am fine.
Good.
To be honest,
it's like ages since I saw you.
Oh, well, we did actually, we have to confess, dear listener, dear heart, that Scott did appear at my house as if by magic because it was my birthday at the weekend and unannounced.
Surprise!
Scott's like a vampire once you've let him in. He can always come in. So he just arrived.
I did.
It was my
bed was ready and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it was my 50th birthday. So that was quite exciting. I was 50.
It was. It's quite nice, actually. I had a lovely night. It's very good.
I was exhausted. How was your better half? That's the real question, because I know he listens, so maybe it would be nice for us to reveal the truth about what actually happened.
He will definitely listen now to hear what we've said about him. There's no slander. There's no, the bar person, no names mentioned, Mrs. C, decided that if Tris had an empty glass, I needed refilling. And essentially, he drank quite a lot of gin without realizing it on Saturday night. And very much suffered on Sunday. Well, he actually suffered on Saturday night and Sunday morning. It was rather hilarious, I thought. But that's just that side of me. I don't know.
Well, there was it was an emotional roller coaster. I think that's what we can call it. Maybe alcohol brings out this sort of emotional pygmyism in him. And he literally sobbed for the last hour about everything. He gushed to the point of tears with just genuine happiness.
It was ugly gin crying. That's what I'm calling it. And I'm going to dine out on it forever.
Excellent.
Because in 24 years, I've never seen him quite so tipsy, shall we say. I don't want to use the word drunk. There was no children involved. We were away for a weekend on our own, etc., etc. But it was rather hilarious, I have to say. And
it was the high point of my
weekend.
From our
perspective. Yeah, I think what I didn't like the next day was when he was explaining to me that I'd forgotten he had never been beyond your kitchen. And that proved a problem overnight when he was looking for the toilet. He didn't know where he was. Because
wandering the halls.
I had to literally put him to bed. I'm going to regale on this for quite a time to come.
Absolutely. You should never let him up on this.
No, never. Yeah. So yeah, but it was a good weekend and I'm really grateful to the good Lady C for inviting us and surprising you. Well, there was an element of surprise here. You said you had a feeling.
Yes, my spider senses started to tingle and I had a feeling that something was amiss. Awry, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But this frivolity.
Anyway, enough of that. Yeah.
I'm really conscious that often we get to this point every other week and we do we sit together and we think, oh, let's do a podcast, let's see what the current topics are, and we sort of pick something out of a hat. But then out of the blue, the news keeps going and it feels like that this week has just been one thing after another seems to have come onto the radar. And the focus of this episode is going to be about matching, because I thought that was something that is really interesting and something quite important, and there's been a few kind of news items and a few things that I've picked up on. But before we even get to that, we've had people contribute to that, so we've got some, we haven't got a guest, we have got contributions from people, because then that will explain all that. But wow, what a week. Have you been watching Twitter and hearing the voices that have been kind of discussing adopter representation? Have you seen that conversation?
Can I just actually say, I've missed this.
What?
I can't believe it. I've missed this. I haven't been on Twitter a lot, I have to be honest. So explain. Tell me like I'm a listener, please.
Well, in some ways, I'm just incidental to it. It's nothing to do with me. Nothing's been aimed at me. So I'm not coming here to vent my spleen and kind of misuse my power. But someone sort of commented, and I know that Adoption UK have been doing some work in relation to adopter representation, which kind of comes off the back of the adoption barometer, which, you know, I think when Becky came in over the summer, she talked about how the barometer for the first time had more contributions from adopted people, adopted adults. Mm-hmm. And she was, so Adoption UK had maybe been sort of going, hey, we're going to do some stuff. And then maybe it was inappropriate language, or it was just miscommunication, or it was maybe people, you know, it was, I think it was Anne Bell who'd said,
are you talking adoptee representation?
Yeah. Oh, I've said adopter, yeah, haven't I?
You said
I?
Adopter.
Oh, yeah, that's stupid.
Yes, I saw that. I couldn't have missed that.
Should we re-record all of that?
No. I think you should crack on and continue to explain, because not everybody's on Twitter. Right?
All right. So, but, so one of the things Anne had said was that, you know, Adoption UK are working to allow adoptees to have more representation and have their voice speaking into strategic conversations mm-hmm. around adoption systems. And then there was this whole kind of hoo-ha around, hang on, you're allowing that kind of language, means it just kind of reinforces that stereotype of that sort of matriarchal, patriarchal thing.
Mm-hmm. Narrative, yeah.
So it got quite heated. So you did see that.
Did.
So
what did
you
yes, tell I did me? See that. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's a lot of stuff within that. I think that the main point to begin with was some of the language that was used, which Anne Bell, who's director in Wales and is an adoptive parent and an adopted adult as well, it's worthwhile pointing out. She did say that, you know, the language could have been a little better, should we say?
Yeah.
And I think that because it was being hosted by an adopted parent as well, I think that came up within the conversation. And there was also an element of kind of this lack of appreciation. And when I say appreciation, I'm talking about, you know, if you're expecting adopted people to give their time up and stuff, then why shouldn't they be paid? And I guess, you know, when I know kind of how, I know up until 2 years ago how adoptive voice worked, and it worked very much on volunteers and input from people who gave up their time to do it. And, you know, there isn't an element of kind of payment for this from that perspective. But I guess that the main point was the language and the fact it was very short notice in terms of being able to input into it, because I think it was only advertised kind of a day or 2 days before. And also it was being hosted by an adoptive parent. And I think,
Adoption UK, which
exactly, which is a peer support agency for parents. Let's face it, you know, I'm not
parents.
Yeah, I will never say much bad about Adoption UK, but you know, we've said before that any adoptee representation has to be by an organisation that is led and run by adoptees, and there are very few of them as yet.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult thing for them to kind of do. But you and I have spoken to many adoptees who are trying very hard to get their voice heard, and we've given them tips and hints and advice and, you know, kind of pointers and what have you, in the hope that, you know, they can kind of be able to become that voice for themselves. So
yeah,
I think that whilst, you know, if I think all organisations should try and support adoptees in the way that they can, and in any way that they can. But I think in terms of the representation, I don't think that should be done by anybody apart from an organisation that, you know, kind of focused in on adoptees, or, you know, I don't know. It's a hard one to explain from my perspective, but that's the way I feel.
It's hard as well. I find it really hard watching, because it feels like there's a real sense of people who've been very hurt, often looking in and going, oh, well, the people who've got a voice, or they've got a platform, or they've been invited in, are people who have got palatable views. Yeah. And so that disenfranchises people who may think, well, my views are not that palatable, and but they're still as valid.
They still want to be heard. Yeah.
We all want to be heard.
I mean, that's it, isn't it? You know, I mean, that's the thing. And I think that you're right. You know, it's about, we've always said this, haven't we? We've spoken to many, because there's always this kind of, well, why should adoptive parents be on the table? Well, it's sad to say that, you know, adoptive parents have found a way to be able to put things that are kind of palatable, like you just said, And as yet, it's very difficult if you aren't able to share that as an adopted person. I mean, people like listening to some of the truths, you know. It just takes one word that's not what somebody wants to hear. But interestingly, today, you know, there was Corin Bath membership conference today.
Yes.
I think it's called that. And there was adopted adults on there, one of them being
Annalisa.
I think it was Annalisa, yeah, from Adoptee Futures. That was good. That's great to see.
It is, but it beggars belief that it's 2021 and we're kind of like fighting over the voices of adopted people in this, like influencing the system. It seems like, wow, we missed the boat like 45 years ago on that one. It just seems remarkable that the power just still lies elsewhere.
Yeah, it does.
But it's changing.
And it's changing, but it's very, I mean, it's the same. Oh, I don't know. I'm always conscious of what I say in this because I don't want to kind of have any adopted person who listens to this thinking that I don't support it, because I do support it. But it's very slow. And you and I have both been very direct about this. And, you know, in the work I do day to day as well, I'm very direct about this because, you know, we need to make sure that we are seen and actually doing this, some of the supporting as well. It's very restrictive very restricted in terms of being able to access support as an adopted adult because there's so many blooming rules and red tape and stuff. Oh, I said blooming on a podcast. Oh, it's not a sweary one, is it?
Oh, blimey. I'm still coming out in a red hot flush after last time, so please don't.
There's such a lack of things that they can access, and that really just, you know, I mean, it's proof in itself. Adopters can be supported by anybody within the community, same as adoptees, but they can access the Adoption Support Fund for the children, which in turn supports the parents, if you like. So you can go on a course to help your child. But what adult adoptees can't access that sort of stuff, you know, that's just not there for them. And yet, beyond the age of 21, if you've not got any, or 25, if you've not got any HCP, I mean, come on, seriously, this stuff needs to bloody well be sorted out.
You need to have an Ofsted registered therapist if you are going to access specific. Yeah. It's like, it's just bonkers. We could talk about that for a long time. Maybe we should.
We could.
I feel like we're banging the same old drum. But it's interesting to see the debate is moving on. And I think both of us at different points have been in rooms and sort of said, come on, but nothing. I'm going to move us on to the next thing, which is, I've got a few things to get to before we get to the main event, is that the Joint Parliamentary Committee on Human Rights is to hold an inquiry into the forced adoption of babies of unmarried mothers during the 50s, 60s and 70s. And there was a news item over the summer, but then it's kind of, actually, I think Harriet Harman is going to chair that. So that's a thing.
That's interesting. Yeah. Now, I'm interested in that because I saw because I've not been on Twitter much today, to be honest with you, but I did see Pam Hodgkins, who was the founder of NORCAP back in the day. She's an adopted adult. And she tweeted about that. Now, we've been trying to get Pam on for some time. That might be something that we think about doing because she is kind of from that generation and she's got a lot to say on that. I'd be really interested to talk about this further with somebody and kind of know, if you like, because we agreed that, you know, there's this point. We were talking about the apology, weren't we, when we talked about it before, and we were saying, well, who should apologize? Should it be society? Should it be a government? Should it be, you know, mother and baby homes? Should it, you know, who was it that kind of instigated this kind of thing in terms of what in effect was forced adoptions for the most part? So I think I don't feel qualified to talk about it too much because it's not my experience. But
I've literally just asked her on Twitter if she'd come on. So
yeah, I know.
So let's get her on.
I'd love to talk to her about it. Yeah. I'd love to talk to her about it.
I think it's too big a subject for us to just scan over, and I think that it. Yeah. I think there's lots of questions about where do you stop and what, you know, where do you draw the line. I would like to ask you to hold your microphone away from your shirt because we don't get the scratchy noise.
Oh, for goodness sake. You know I'm not at home with my usual things and I can't just do it.
With your classic FM setup with soundproof mics and subwoofers and...
Oh, listen, we're going live shortly with FASD Hub Scotland, so it could go very wrong.
I'm going to move on to our next topic, which is that we've got a conference coming up on the 26th of November. Please come along. We've got a fantastic lineup. Just a really quick plug for that. We're going to be looking and thinking about the issue of identity, and I think that's something that isn't something that's so pronounced when we adopters first get the children, but it's something that becomes really, really important. So we've got a couple of adopted adults, one with it's a kind of a professional stake in the whole issue as well. Yeah. Psychologists, mm-hmm. trauma therapists, and we've got Vicky McEwen coming on, and we've got some other people, you and me. But please come along again.
some other people.
It's going to be cheap as chips.
No Borders Training.org.
That's the one. Yeah.
We're 6 months in July, August, September, October. No, we're nearly 3 months on. You still just.
Yeah. I know. It's tissue tash.
Jesus, boy.
Contact your RAA and tell them to buy you a ticket. That would be even better.
Yeah. I think that's even better. Because if RAAs do kind of commit to doing this, then we will make sure that they get more tickets than they pay for. And we're not. That's not about us giving preference. That's about saying to them, okay, so if you're going to if you're going to support your adopters by paying for this, then we'll give you a few more tickets, just so that actually maybe even some of the RAA staff could come along and learn something from an adoptee's perspective or an adopted parent's perspective, because, you know, that's quite important as well. Tickets are £15. We are going to be reminding you all over the place until that happens. We are very confident that it's not going to be anything like last year, because we were all in lockdown last year and we couldn't go anywhere and there was no events and stuff. But we're still going to do it.
Yeah.
Because we feel it's a bit of fun as well. We had a laugh last year.
We did have a laugh.
I mean, we had to have a lie down in a room for about 3 days afterwards, but in a dark room, should I say. But I really enjoyed last year. I really did enjoy it. And just doing it online as well. It was interactive as well. That's the thing. I think everybody thinks if you come along to these things that you can't say anything. But there's a chat box. We had to download the chat box afterwards to make sure that we hadn't missed anything. That was fun as well. So,
yes. Yeah.
And if you can't come on a day, or you've got issues with school or having to go somewhere, then we will be sending around the recording afterwards as well.
Yeah, so. We'll cut it up into the different sections and you can listen at your leisure.
NoBordersTraining.org.
Excellent. And the next thing on my list, but I'm only going to just even mention it, is that if you've got eyes to see, if you're looking on the social media this weekend, go to pause.org and look at their campaign around contact.
Yes.
Really interesting.
Yes. Seen it.
And I think we are speaking to Sarah Johal in a couple of weeks, aren't we?
We are.
And I have
I'm looking data, forward to that.
Data that's been given to me by Freedom of Information Act releases about contact and letterbox. Scoop, scoop.
We're going now with this, is it? We're doing Freedom of Information requests and stuff.
Someone came to me and said, look, I've asked every single RAA in the country about their contact arrangements. Right. And what's going on? I'm not going to reveal anything, but it is pretty damn shocking what's going on. Or what's not going on, more to the point.
Oh, my days.
So I'm going to doorstep Sarah Johal. I'm going to kind of like go, and did you know? That's a bit mean, isn't it? I bet I'll not do that.
That is mean. And also, you've just said that out loud, so she's going to do her homework before she comes on. If she's even listening.
I'm pretty sure Sarah Johal's not listening to this. Probably not. Okie dokie, to the main event. Matching. So Scott,
matching.
Tell me about your experience of matching. What did you expect it to happen when you got approved? The green pastures were ahead of you. You got approved, and then you fall into this strange netherworld called matching. I know your second story, because Jacob, you were a foster carer, so that doesn't count. That's a different story.
Yeah, first I know. Time. Yeah, that was a completely different setup. Interesting. Because my experience was quite different, and I'm not sure if I can relate, or maybe I can. I don't know. I'm just going to go for it and tell
Please
you.
Please do. We'll, the we suspense can, we can is literally it. Killing me.
Mm. It should be as well, because it's quite an interesting in the story. So as the first same-sex adopter, don't you know, through the local authority.
Yeah, you've never mentioned that before.
Never. I know. I mean, all these youngins coming up now, you know.
You old
there's
fart.
So many of them. Yeah, they just get like kids thrown at them.
That's an awful,
I am joking. I am joking. Yes, I am joking. I apologize for my comments. I didn't mean it, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, we were told quite early on that the chances of us being matched with a child through the local authority were fairly slim for two reasons. One, because we were a first same-sex couple. Secondly, because it was a unitary authority, so they were quite small. I don't know what that... I don't know why that was relevant at the time, but it seemed to be relevant. We seemed to understand it. So maybe it was about the number of children they had. I just don't know. So we were put on the National Adoption Register straight away. As soon as we were approved, we literally wrote our profile up and off it went.
Just historically, the National Adoption Register has gone now, hasn't it?
It has, yeah.
It has, yeah.
It has.
So that used to be, I guess the equivalence is like a link maker, isn't it?
It kind of was, but it was a paper version. Yeah, it was a paper version.
Stone tablet version.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Where you chipped out your picture. You had to chip out your photograph on it, you know. So I was a stick man. I don't know what Tris was, but anyway. So that was the first thing. And you know, it was kind of a form that's filled in with the... And if we think about a child's profile now, it was a very similar kind of thing, but it was just a paper version, yeah. Because it's difficult to say what an adoptive parent's version would look like now without seeing it. I don't know. Anyway, long story short, we went on the National Adoption Register. I have no clue where that information was shared. So, you know, that's kind of one of the things these days that kind of wouldn't happen without signing lots of agreements under GDPR and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, I'm sure when you sign up to LinkMaker, you have to kind of tick boxes and check boxes and all that sort of stuff. Don't know. I've never had to look for children on LinkMaker, so I really don't know.
I've done some work on LinkMaker, but I am familiar with LinkMaker. Anyway, we'll stick to your story, but we'll get back to, because you've raised some interesting points. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. So anyway, the next thing we had to do was we had to pay for, and when I say pay, I don't mean that in a kind of negative way. I just mean that we had to basically do our own family finding, which we had to pay for. So we had to sign up to what was then Be My Parent. We went with Be My Parent through British Association of Adoption and Fostering, or BAF as they were known then. And they had a kind of a newspaper style-y
once a
family
month
finding
was
thing.
It?
Yeah. It was once a month, yeah, because we signed up to 3 months because Tris was too miserable to go any further than that. Because it was quite expensive. I'm not being funny. It was quite expensive. And we weren't sure, you know, we didn't have the kind of nous or the experience to know whether this was going to be a success or not, you know. And, you know, you're trying to save up to buy a bed for a child because you think you're going to, you know, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff that comes with it. So it's quite a... Back then, it wasn't easy, I don't think, to go straight onto the National Adoption Register. You've been approved as a same-sex couple. I mean, this is different probably to your experience. Being approved as a same-sex couple with a tricky panel where they were questioning everything about your sexuality, to then be approved and then kind of go straight into doing your own family finding really wasn't what we thought it would be, if that makes sense. We didn't think that we would have to kind of fight to get through panel. And then once panel came and we were approved, you know, I remember feeling just flat. I didn't kind of feel anything about it really. And then having to go on to do your own family finding. And I'm sure they must have been doing stuff behind the scenes, but, you know, that's not something that I was aware of. So then having to kind of invest, sounds wrong, but invest money in doing your own family finding as well. You know, and there was no face-to-face stuff that you used to do then, as in, you know, going to these exchange days or anything like that. There was nothing like that. So we just cracked on. Anyway, we looked at profiles and we kind of wrote names down. We took it separately. So we always took the female parents separately. We'd go and do our own like Whitland from the profiles and stuff. And we generally came up with the same children, but we only, like we said, this would be my number one, this would be my number two, and this would be my number three. And that's how blunt it was.
It's brutal. I mean, it is a brutal process.
It's horrible. I mean, when I think back now, it was a process. But now, looking back, it's a brutal process. Family finding is a brutal process if you're doing it on your own or if you're doing it proactively. But, you know, that's part of the process, really. And it took us to, well, it didn't take us, but there was, I mean, the older two boys were always on that list. But because we had it in our head, we weren't looking for siblings, because we were kind of still thinking about the prep course where we said we were looking for a little girl and blah, 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 blah. So the kind of, yeah, but there was no, there was lots of little girls in the Be My Parent, but it was the sibling groups stood out to us.
Well, it is, I mean, it's all, I think prior to approval, it's all hypothetical, isn't it? It's all imaginary and it's all, none of it's tangible. It's all ifs and buts. But then all of a sudden you're looking at a photograph of a real human. And it's interesting because as you're saying that, I'm conscious, I don't know whether you've heard it, this idea that this sort of like this backlash from adopted people saying, you know, you've probably seen the memes where people say, you know, oh, you were chosen, you know, you were a gift from God and all of that kind of stuff. And them saying, no, we were just the next on the list.
Mm.
And you kind of go,
it's brutal. But it's difficult to explain it, isn't it? Without, because it's not quite like, well, it wasn't quite like that for us. I mean, we'd never say to my children ever, but I did choose my children because there was something about them. They were on each of the three lists that we wrote up. And there was just something like from day one when I saw them, I was like, those are my children. You know, and that's not the phrase to use these days. I know that, but that's how I felt at the time.
But it's reflected in some of the contributions we've had from people, isn't it? That you, so then you what happened then when you, I'll not tell my story because my story is just absolutely mediocre by comparison. Like a lot of things about me. So you then, you put your sort of flag in the ground and said, right, this is where we want to go. What happened then? Was it a competitive match? Did you go to panel?
Well, that's interesting because our social workers weren't keen to progress it. How I look at them now and laugh, but
and then weep.
Yeah, for some reason they just weren't positive about it, and they had lots of worries, lots of concerns. Long story short, they kind of argued that one of us had to stay at home, which was me at that point, permanently until they were old enough to kind of, you know, be so let loose in society. So, you know, I should really still be at home because there was lots of to and fro about all that sort of stuff. But interestingly, their social worker was very keen on us because it kind of, there was a lot of kind of background issues with females and stuff like that. So it kind of, you know, like I think the social workers on the boys' side were a little bit more progressive and a little bit more forward thinking.
And also they knew the children.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, can I just say that it wasn't our social worker themselves, it was the kind of supervising social worker and team manager that weren't so keen on the match. So they kind of fought and pushed against it. But you know my husband, he's rather tenacious when he gets going, and as am I if I get a bit fighty.
Yeah.
And we just kept on kind of pushing for it because we thought that this was right for us. We thought, you know, we didn't know everything about them. We knew what was written in the profile, and we all know that there's often aren't kind of as accurate as could be.
Can I tell my story? Can I? Because this is the moment where I've been saving this story up for quite a period of time, right? A social work colleague came to me with literally tears down their eyes, laughing so hard they were almost ill. And they said, this is a great manifestation as to why referrals need to be written really well. And it was a fostering referral, so it was about a child specifically. And obviously, I'm no names, no nothing. So it's non-identifiable. I'm just going to get the exact wording because it was, they said, they said, so they would describe the child, in the middle of it said, "This child is crafty." And I went,
that can mean anything.
And I went, "You can't say that about a child." And she went, "No." And then they explained, by that I mean that they're like making things out of wood.
Yeah, see? That's just, yeah.
Because when you say crafty to me, I think, this child's crafty, what do you mean? What the, up to no good, and a little the artful dodger. Oh, but anyway, you so you referrals.
No, you're. I mean, that said to me, crafty as in the artful dodger, crafty.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in the sense of I'm crafty. No,
this child is crafty.
Yeah. See, that's very interesting.
So the referrals. Yeah, so, it's your comma in the wrong place, exactly. And this is.
The interesting thing is we have kept absolutely everything because we were always and are continue to be believers in, you know, that is their story to tell. They need to be able to see, no matter how accurate it is or truthful it is, I think that it's really important if they ever want to see it that they see what we saw.
Yeah.
And obviously there's always going to be more because it's written, you know yourself as a social worker that you would write it. You try and be as kind of, what's the word? I can't remember the word, but you kind of try and write it in kind of a way that it would be, what's that word, Al? Help me out. You've normally got the words.
What do you mean? Do you mean that it's descriptive of them? Not, it's not just a collection of facts. It manifests. Well,
yeah, I mean, it's kind of, yeah. It's yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'll remember after we finish recording. No doubt.
We'll put it in at the end. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
The word Scott was looking for was.
Yeah, was. But yeah, it's it was just, I don't think I like matching. I really don't. And I watch now when some kind of people who are going through the process, having sat on panels with local authorities and stuff, you know, you've got people who are coming for approval and matching on the same day, you know, and sometimes, you know, that's kind of, wow, okay. So, you know, these guys have literally, you know, applied to adopt and kind of a child is just there for them. And that's, how lovely is that for them? But
that would have happened to us. That would have been if our social worker had gone on. Actually, had to go away. She had an annual leave booked, like extended annual leave. So we were given. I remember it was actually we still got it like you. It's a piece of lined A4 paper that's been ripped out of a notebook, and it's got the names of my three children on and their ages. And the social worker came to us and she said, "Look, we've got three children, X, Y, and Z." Wow.
Okay.
And because we were the only couple in the authority that were approved for three children, they said, so for us, I mean, that, so you said about the next on the list. For you, that's just not true. For us, that is actually just true. I remember, I've still got the piece of paper and I can remember looking at it and thinking, nothing will ever be the same again. They said, well, if you're up for it, then they produce the, you know, all the referral documentation, they put the child protection, what's it, the PARS?
CPR.
Yeah, CPR. So there's the C3, I should know that, I'm a social worker. The
C3PO, were you going to say that?
Yeah, the C3POs and the R2D2s. And so our matching was really straightforward, and obviously then we fostered. I guess part of the reason we're having this discussion, I think there's a lot of themes that you experience that are just really just so still current, you know, they're just right now.
Yeah.
But I was looking at these adoption stats because you know I do light reading before bed. 2015 there was 5,360 children adopted. 2019 3,570. 2020 3,440. The word on the street is that it's going to be less again this year, and it's all the COVID and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. This is complicated. If you're an adopter, that's bad news. The rest of the world thinks that's good news.
Yeah, I know. It's such a conundrum, isn't it?
Yeah, and we know that historically the adoption recruitment has not been great. You know, it would be maybe condensed into 1 week a year, which would be the National Adoption Week, which is coming up. Lots of exciting things planned for then. But now we've got the UK. Well, maybe. But we've got the... what have we got? We've got the You Can Adopt campaign for all its detractors and complications across the year. It's running across the year, isn't it? And it's so we've seen an increase in adopters coming through. I think we're probably at a stage where we've got more adopters than adopted children waiting. And that changes everything, doesn't it?
Because
adoptive parents, when you and I adopted, we were a commodity. We were in a minority.
Yeah, well, it was
a buyer's... I can use the brutal language, which will I'll go down in flames with. It was a buyer's market. And now it's not.
Pretty much.
It's a seller's market, which is really messy. And now would be a good time. I reached out, that's because that's what people do, isn't it? I reached out to a few people and asked them to contribute. Interestingly, no one wanted to come on air and contribute. Maybe that's personal. Maybe that's about you and me. I don't know. Flippant. But I think it just speaks of the vulnerability people feel during matching, that actually the stakes are really high and they can't afford to misstep or be seen to be, I don't know. Who's going to complain while they're in matching? Who's going to kick up the fuss? Well,
this is the other thing, isn't it? Unless you've got a big set of cojones and you're very brave, then who does? Who does until actually you apply for that adoption order? I'm not going to be funny. And do you know what? If somebody has had the cojones to do that, actually, well, I had a conversation with somebody this week who had the as in for the conversations.
Yeah.
But not many people do. But if you have, give us a shout because we'd like to hear how you
did it. Yeah, we'd love to hear a story. How did that turn out? So I had a few people contribute, which is really brave of them, but obviously they asked to be anonymous. We offered that. So I read it. One person sent quite a long post, and there's someone who kind of was, you know, they're articulate and well-read. So I've read this out on their behalf. So I'm pretty sure that Jack and Ori are not going to be in touch with me any second soon for me to do my reading. It's not my... It took me about 8 hours to read this out in one take without...
I think it's CBeebies bedtime or whatever it's called. And they normally have kind of famous people on these days. I don't think Jack and Ori is a thing anymore. If it is, I might be wrong, but I don't think Jack and Ori exists anymore. Anyway.
Small interlude.
Finish your story.
Yeah. So I'm going to insert that here now. If that's okay, and we'll and when we can maybe reflect on it, because you've read it, you know what it is. I'm going to insert it here. Waiting for the match. We were approved at the end of last year, and throughout stage two, we were told there were lots of small siblings and that people were being matched really quickly. One of the examples we were given, a couple were approved on a Wednesday and they picked up their foster to adopt baby from the hospital on the Friday. We were also told that the family finders would love us and be fighting over us. We were led to believe that we would not be waiting long, weeks, potentially days. Our expectations had been raised really high. Our local authority did not want us to move on to Linkmaker for 3 months after our approval. They wanted to be able to place children with us from their own pool. Within a month of approval, the LA told us about some siblings they had and asked us to wait for them. News was very irregular and generally only received after I'd chased. Still, I believed they were ours. I imagined them here. I imagined their bedrooms and what we would do. I even imagined their car seats and researched which were the best. When you have waited for years for children, it's difficult to stop emotions and dreams from snowballing. There is so much love already in my heart. Eventually, after waiting 4 months, we were told it wouldn't happen with those children and encouraged to get onto Linkmaker. I had not expected this outcome and felt so incredibly sad and disappointed. We searched on Linkmaker, and it's a hard thing to do. There are so many children, even if you filter. It's heartbreaking to see these beautiful children waiting for their forever family. It's also heartbreaking when you look at all these beautiful children and they don't feel like yours. You question yourself, are you too fussy? Will any child feel like yours? Will you ever feel a connection to one of these profiles? And then you find one. The amazing feeling when you see a profile that speaks to you. You put in an expression of interest and hope. We heard nothing back. A couple of months later, that discussion was cancelled without ever being started. There was no message with the cancellation, a silent rejection. Then there was another profile we liked. These ones felt like the ones. I almost convinced myself there was a family likeness with both of our families. What a joy. We were shortlisted to 4 couples, but missed out due to our location. Then we found another sibling group, but it had been input incorrectly. They had missed out on a third sibling, so that discussion was cancelled. We looked. For weeks, there were no children we felt any connection to again. All the while getting updates from the adoption community of being linked, matched and officially adopted, you start feeling that there is something wrong with you. RLA assured us everyone is matched within 6 months. When we hit the 6 months, we really started thinking there was a problem. We asked what else we could do. Was there something we needed to evidence in our profile? Were our photos okay? We were told everything was fine, but there was just a shortage of little siblings. It's been such a frustrating wait. We do not hear anything unless we make the effort to ask or chase up. Linkmaker expressions of interest seems to be often ignored. We've had several others just cancelled, with no word, no explanation. A discussion simply cancelled feels harsh and abrupt. Before we were approved, there was a lot of contact, a lot of positive messages. Now I feel like I'm a resource, on a bench until I can be used. I only hear from our LA if I contact them. I feel like I'm always asking for information and usually get told things have been postponed again or there is no news. We have been told that currently there are no little ones in our LA. We were also told there have been delays in the courts due to COVID. Our road to adoption was not an easy one, and whilst I absolutely understand and believe that the children should be the priority, we too may have been through trauma. Infertility and baby loss are not an easy path to navigate. We're humans with emotions, hopes, dreams, wishes, which don't feel like they are taken into consideration. I understand that a match has to be right. I want it to be right. But just the silence that surrounds the process once you're approved is alienating. It also seems that the system is particularly long and painful for the children when they could have been with their forever family months ago. Things are extended, postponed, shifted so often that you can also not be the best solution for the children held in limbo. I know that social services are busy. I know that a lot of this probably is probably out of their hands, but even being told there is no news is something. Or having been prepared that matching could take months, even years. We'd been told weeks, and now we just get a loud silence. I know the children have to be the priority, but I am a mother waiting for my children, for the loves of my life. That isn't nothing. That deserves kindness, care and attention. So, you've read it, you've heard it, whatever. I found that to be really moving, really articulating that kind of that sense of frustration and heartache that is just involved in the process.
It is, but can I just say, I must be becoming totally, totally hardened to these stories because I wasn't surprised.
Like, no.
It's not nice, and I know it's not nice, but I'm not surprised. And you know, the comments about Linkmaker and how that makes you feel, yes, that's, you know, I think we can reflect on that and say, yes, that's what, you know, whether it was in a magazine that was like Argos or whether it's on Linkmaker, you know, it's hard to look at these children and not want to give a home to them, you know, and because that's what, you know, but they're not dogs and they're not cats, you know, this is kind of a little bit more than that, but I wasn't surprised.
I find it, yeah, but you think
that I was more shocked by not being surprised than, you know, I don't know.
Which, yeah, it made me think about a lot of things. So it's clear that there's a before and after approval. So there's people feel really included, welcomed, involved, contacted. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's moving forward. And then it's like falling off a cliff. And this, you know, this woman, you know, she talks about the challenge of not being able to get in touch, having to chase a social worker. Is it on? Is it not on? What have you heard?
Yeah.
Now, Linkmaker, I think, and I've spoken to, I mean, I I know the guy behind it, Andy Lee Remix. I don't know him as I know him, but I've chatted to him. And I just wonder, this is a, it's not a social work organisation, is it? It's a...
No. It's a community enterprise, isn't it?
Someone raised the question to me, because with it being this involved in adoption, should it be Ofsted registered? And it's not. And I just was reading some of that stuff about, you know, put an inquiry in, hear nothing, put an inquiry in, hear nothing. And actually, where's the duty of care? Adopters are still humans, still vulnerable.
I mean, I've got experience in Linkmaker from a couple of years ago when I worked at Adoption UK, because we set up a partnership so that they would support us with our online forum. And when I kind of asked lots of questions and stuff, it was clear that when there's a bit of a tip in the balance of, you know, more adopters and less children, or more prospective adopters and less children, that literally there are people, and I'm not saying this lady is one of them, I'm definitely not saying that, but there are people who will just literally click to express an interest in any child, because as soon as they come on, it's like, you know, you have to do it. Now, back then, I think there was kind of a limit to the number of people that could actually express an interest, because otherwise, you know, people would have been inundated. But the point is that there's so many kind of things that aren't great with that. There's so many good things about it. There's, you know, so I think that whilst Linkmaker definitely fits for an online kind of platform for looking for parents, and I think that, you know, if I'm sure if we looked at the figures, probably the reason that there's not so many adoptions, but probably the reason that actually we've kind of brought the waiting time down for a lot of these children is probably as a result of Linkmaker, in all honesty. However, what we're not taking into account here is the increase in SGOs and kinship care. We're also not taking about the stay put stuff. So, you know, children who are settled with a foster carer, and whilst maybe a permanent family would be good, you know, sometimes it's not just not the right thing. So, you know, in terms of the numbers that you were talking about earlier, I'm not talking about this.
Foster to adopt. You don't mean staying put. Yeah. That's something else. Foster to adopt.
That's the one. So, you know, there's kind of a lot of reasons why. But it's not great for...
It just seems brutal. But interestingly, local authorities not wanting to put people onto Linkmaker, and that's a theme that we got back to correspondence, kind of going, oh, no. But there's a financial reason for that. You know, Linkmaker are not a charity. I think they're a not-for-profit, in their defence. Not sure, but I'm pretty sure value base. If it's not maybe their constitution, it's their value base. Mm-hmm. But you know that if a local authority, if you have an adopter and you know, it's £27,000 per child you pay for a child out of.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of money. Yeah.
And regionalisation was supposed to help with that as well, wasn't it?
Yes.
So that if we expand the pool, I say that with my fingers in the air, the pool of children and adopters, that actually the matches would be quicker, they would be more localised, they would cost less, et cetera, et cetera. And clearly, I don't know, has that worked? I mean, we'll have to ask Sarah Joelle that, because, you know, I'm sure she'll have her finger on the pulse in terms of the figures and that. But I can't see that it has, because I'm still seeing agencies on social media advertising children.
And likewise, if the number of children is reduced, then adopters are waiting longer. And so adopters will be sitting going, right, I've waited the 3 months you made me wait. I want to be on Linkmaker.
Exactly.
And then the local authorities or the RAA that they're in loses a bit of control, because how can they not progress a match if it's a good one?
Yeah. And you just reminded me, in the old days, when you went on the National Adoption Register, you weren't supposed to do that for 3 months. So... that kind of, we had to go on straight away. I'm just explaining that because you've just mentioned three-month thing with Linkmaker, and that's, I don't know. It's just, it's rough. And, you know, we had a message today I don't think it's just approved adopters either that are feeling this. We had a message today through the podcast from potential adopter, because they've not gone through the process yet, but they've gotten to a certain point in the process where they're so frustrated with the agency because they're just not moving on fast enough. Now, I don't know if all of these are local authority agencies, I suspect they are. No offense, local authorities, but or regional adoption agencies, but you know, you need to do a little bit better with this because you know.
But if we're seeing an increase in numbers of adopters and we're seeing them sort of stockpiling, then that the whole system's going to slow down and go, well, why? You know, stockpiling's a terrible. We're talking about people, but that's
of course the reality. No, because of that ruling, and this isn't a criticism, but because of that ruling a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago, you know, you can't refuse to take somebody on stage one.
So, what ruling?
You know, there was some. It was to do with that couple down in. Was it Berkshire or something like that? They were refused to be taken on to stage one because of their ethnicity, because they said
that's
that they,
right. Yes,
yeah,
yes,
yeah. So now local authorities or any agency actually are not allowed to refuse to take someone on to stage one just based on for any reason. They have to take them on to at least stage one. I guess,
yeah, their argument had been that what you want we don't have, so you're gonna, exactly. Sorry,
yeah,
but that's ooh. That's a mess.
I mean, that does add, and I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but it does add to the kind of level of work that these agencies have to do. Because, you know, if you have someone apply for, you know, if say 3 years ago, if you had 30 people come to an information evening and 10 of those applied and 5 of them were required, let's say, probably, you know, you've got your staffing levels and all your kind of, you know, resources and capacity and all that sort of stuff. It's fine. If you've now got 10 people applying who've come along, that's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. So, you know, but nobody's kind of sat down and thought that one through in terms of explanations and stuff, you know. And I'm not saying that adopters need to know, but actually, or prospective adopters need to know, but I'm just saying that, you know, that is kind of doubling the workload for some of these agencies. Some of them are quite small. You know, some of the adoption teams can't deal with that kind of resource, that kind of input or throughput. So it's a bit messy again, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, as I said before, but I think adopters are I've always perceived adopters to be inherently vulnerable, but I don't think that adopters necessarily see themselves as that until it turns to this, because you kind of, you know, I think that it's not the universal story, and obviously, is it something like 15% of adopters are same-sex couples? Is it more? Yeah. It's about something like that, give or take. 1 in 7, isn't it, or something like that?
Something like that.
But the other cohort, even if 50% of the people who come to adopt are people who've experienced infertility and potentially loss, you know, miscarriage, and you know, and that is that takes its toll, grief and loss, you know, chronic loss.
Mm-hmm.
They're people who are coming thinking, right, this is Last Chance Saloon.
Yeah,
and that raises the stakes. So people are pliable, and like you say, they need absolute courage if they're going to complain and kick up a fuss. So even the podcast on Friday, you know, whether on Saturday with the social worker who'd been knocked back by a local authority, she got through the process and they went, oh no, we're not going to do it. And you go, oh. And she said, you know, it was really interesting because we talked about it. I said, you know, what's that like as a social worker? And she went, oh, shocking social work practice. You know, literally being hauled off the coals. Yeah. And she's gone on to do different. She doesn't work in adoption, but she's worked in social work. And she went, oh, flipping awful social work practice. But they can afford, you know, they. I'm going to read out maybe one of the. We've got a couple of things I'll read out. So this is someone who anonymously got in touch with me. We started the journey in December 2019. We were told we would go to a panel in August about our social work not being able to come out to do a home assessment. We didn't go till November 2020. You're approved, really strong. That's, you know.
That's a long time.
That's a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Give or take. Just so you're out of time scales already.
Months. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there was a pandemic. Yeah.
True.
But yeah, still broke the law. We asked about Linkmaker, but the social worker tried to put us off and said it was children more hard to place.
Okay. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this naughty social worker. But what did this look like? We probed her further and she finally gave us access. She also told us that there was a shortage of children and more adopters currently. Really? I tell you, I'm not painting social workers in a good light here. On Linkmaker, by the end of May, we'd expressed interest in 26 profiles. Lots of different comebacks, but none at all. We found our little boy via a link maker with our LA. It was a battle because he was at risk of something. I'm not going to give that. Yeah, might be identifiable.
No, yeah. I'm reading it as you're talking. So,
yeah. All right, okay. When we tried to express interest the first time, they told us we already had a potential link. We met social workers, etc. But after some issues the child's need, they decided they wanted to look at adopting him. Or they said the foster carers decided they wanted
foster
to look at
him. Yeah.
We push on with our little boy and got approval panel this week and got the yes intro start in October. So that's taken 2 years. I mean, that it sounds, I mean, every adoption's messy,
but with lots of hurdles in the way, and not hurdles that should be there. So a social worker gatekeeping access to Linkmaker. Now, if there's a reason why they can't access Linkmaker, tell them, please. Any social worker that's listening, don't be like that. Just say, look, you
be
have
honest.
To wait. Yeah, you have to wait 3 months or whatever your agency thing is. But don't
I tell you what, the best thing about, because in a long time ago when I was going through the adoption process, I was followed by the BBC, which I don't know if I've said that before.
You said that a few times. I still need to watch it, actually.
Oh, you don't. But one of the really interesting things was,
I just want to see for your bleach blonde hair.
Well, yeah, the BBC were fantastic, and what they did was they said, look, we're going to actually employ a social worker. Just not just someone who knows their stuff. She was fantastic. I mean, she was like, it's like getting an Isabel Trowler, you know, someone at that level. And she went like, all right, let's crack on. And she would come and see us and she said, you're doing okay? You're okay with the BBC here? Because they're all doing that. Are you okay with your social workers? So it was like having our own social worker just for us.
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was interesting because the social workers from the local authority would come out and go, oh, X, Y, Z, you know, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do that. And then we'd, our social worker would come and go, it's a load of baloney. That's only their policy. They're telling you it's the law, but it's their policy. And there's a difference. And they should tell you there's a difference.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you don't have to do it. Just means be clear.
Yeah. And I think that's a key part of this, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know what? If we said, I know that there's been a lot of investment in recruitment and stuff. I mean, we're coming up to National Adoption Week, which will be, again, focused on recruitment, more likely than not. But we don't need to recruit them, innit? Okay, but let's look at long-term support. Let's look at supporting adopted adults. Let's look at other stuff rather than just, you know, recruitment, because there's going to come a point where you've got lots of different prospective adopters who've been approved who are literally going to go years waiting. And is that fair on them? I'm not saying it's fair on a child to be put in the situation, but is it fair on leading adults who want to become parents for whatever reason, okay? Because there's many different reasons. But is it fair to lead them on to the point of approval to say, right, you're approved, off you go and find your family?
Well, yeah.
You know, is that fair? Is that fair when we know the chances are potentially they might not have, you know, might take them a couple of years, or they might not even get to that point?
Well, you pointed out the fact that the local authorities can't say no unless there's a legitimate reason, unless there's a criminal offence or there's health or whatever the reason is. But this
that's
year's
what I'm saying, the situation that what the government, I'm assuming it was the government, what the situation the government has put agencies in is this. However, I do get it, but there has to be a balance with this. You know, we have to be able to inform, to say, look, you know, I don't know what the solution is. If we knew the solution, we would provide it and people would pay us and then I'd be a millionaire, right? But there is no solution to it, is there?
You raise loads of really interesting questions in my head. So first of all, if we say there's 1,000, let's imagine imaginary figures, that there's 1,000 children and there's 1,000 adopters.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's, you know, oh wow, it all adds up. That doesn't mean 1,000 children are going to get adopted, does it?
No, exactly. Yeah.
So you
and
need,
it doesn't mean 1,000 adults, 1,000 parents are going to have a child. Because, so,
for example, this year... This year's focus on National Adoption Week, I think, is siblings. So, right. So here's, what is the number of adopters you need to adopt 1,000 children?
Wow. See, now that would be a statistic I'd be interested to hear. Or a number I'd be interested in.
Because there'll be maybe 800 of those children that will be relatively straightforward for all of the complexity we know, but there'll be children who look good in Be My Parent, whose pictures look good. Then there will be other children who are more complicated with, and we know children with question marks, you know, perhaps, you know, family history, you know, health issues. There'll always be children who are going to really struggle to find families. And I think people come into adoption, you know, people sign on the red line a year, 2 years down the away from here, and they go, I want to adopt a child. And then you get to look at those 1,000 children and go, there's none of them children for me.
Exactly.
Or I'm at the back of the queue. The kids I want have all gone have gone foster to adopt because they came straight from the hospital. Oh, what a bloody mess, Scott.
I tell you. I'm telling you.
I mean, we could ask Sarah Johalad.
Well, we could, couldn't we? I mean, we've got a pandemic, we've got a fuel crisis.
Crikey.
It's
gas
all coming
prices of gas.
Yeah, I know. I mean, where would we prioritise all these crises? I don't know. But I think that by asking the question, we've created a bit of a conversation around it, because I still firmly believe that whilst we can continue to, to recruit so the cows come home, but there's going to be a lot of disappointed kind of people in within that, and I think that's wrong,
unethical.
I really do. Yeah,
because the collateral damage for those people who, off the back of whatever experiences have got them to that point, to then sit in the holding pattern for how long before they go enough, because it's not passive.
Yeah, but then agencies have to justify why they're not taking people through to certain stages, or, you know, whatever, judges' houses, or, you know, the semi-finals, or whatever it is that, however it is they word it these days. I don't know. It's there's a lot of people kind of, it's not fair on, but, you know, things like matching, let's be honest, you know,
it's brutal.
It is brutal, but agencies need to be honest about why they're not allowing prospective adopters access to Linkmaker. It's always been an issue for as long as Linkmaker's been there. It's the same as the National Adoption Register. You can't go on that until 3 months. We need to exhaust all opportunities within our networks. So whether that was the next local authority or our own local authority or whatever, it's just, yeah. But you need to be upfront and honest about that, rather than kind of hide behind just not giving them a license to be able to go on to Linkmaker. Because every license costs money, you know? So there we go.
So I think, in conclusion, it's a huge issue, but I think that the lack of transparency, and I think that when you, you know, if you're an adopter and you're in that, and then you're watching, hey, come be an adopter, the National Adoption Week is going to be like a kick in the guts for you.
Exactly.
Where are you going to go and get good advice or good support? I mean, I know that Adoption UK have sort of people who have support groups for people in that between here and there. But actually, where are you going to get support? And you can't, you know, you can't. It's a really,
I think it's grassroots stuff. It is grassroots stuff, this. I'm not going to lie. You know, don't get me wrong, Adoption UK, amazing. And, you know, all the support that they offer is fantastic. But some of it is grassroots. Like, you know, like I say, we've had people reach out to us a lot.
I don't think I realise.
There's partly that, but actually I think that says a lot, you know, if they're reaching out to us, then they must be desperate for support, kind of thing, you know. But some people just, like, you connect with somebody, you know, you maybe don't like groups, you maybe don't want to be sharing stuff like that, etc, etc. So, you know, it's all relative. But like, we both work a lot, so, you know, feel free to contact us, but we might not be able to help you personally. God, I feel like I've just opened up a chasm there of anyway, yeah, we will try and help if possible, but, you know, we can't always help you ourselves, so we might, maybe it might just be signposting, and that's fine, you know, people like signposting as well.
Maybe we could retool our complaints department to be supportive.
Yeah, to be supportive. Yeah, helpline. Let's do a helpline. But what's interesting as well is every time I speak to somebody, or every time I message them, I'm like, who's your local authority? Who's your RAA? Because I, like, if I know somebody in the RAA, then I can, or if I've worked for them or whatever in the past, and you can, I know,
point them somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Or I can give them some advice on how to approach it, which we've done a couple of times actually since COVID. So yeah.
Smashing.
Anywho,
we seriously have to go, Scott. We've got places to be. Yeah,
we have things to do. We have. Yeah, we're going to do a live, which has already gone out on Wednesday night.
Oh my goodness, it's you've got the peanut that reverses
like,
time.
This is like what's it called? What's that movie? I don't know. The one with Michael J. Fox and whatever. No. Back to the Future. This is Back to the Future. Ooh. No, Back to the Future. That's what I was thinking. Right. Yeah. Gotta go.
Okay.
Mustache. Need to wait.
Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi.
Recording stopped.
That's a good podcast.